Devices Radio Network.
Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland is for informational and educational purposes only. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, good to hear from you, man. You holding it together over there?
Just. Frustrating week.
I won't bore
people with too much details, but let me put it this way. At this moment in time, I'm surprised I'm not on charge for murdering two of my children, the whole of eBay computer supplies, and LV car insurance. And to be fair, the car insurance have actually been very, very good up until this last moment.
Yeah.
And they're being twats. But So lots of woo-saw moments, lots of rubbing my ears and counting to 10, lots of whiskey. And I'm getting through there just.
But somebody's got a new convertible, I hear.
I have fully and officially handed in my man card, and I have a fully fledged hairdresser. My wife is publicly announced she is looking for another husband.
I think I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
And yes, I'm more than willing when I now do PTs to offer a quick cut and a blow dry on the side.
Nice, nice. It's like a one stop shop.
Yeah, men's grooming as well. Yeah, I'm not.
Well, Mrs.
I bought the vehicle because it was a good deal, more than anything else.
And I'll tell you what, Mrs. Dave Crossland is going to be happy when it's nice weather and the wind is blowing through her hair as you two cruise, careen through the cities and stuff with your top down in the summertime in the nice weather.
She's got a little 500 that's convertible, so obviously she's only got a little top.
So she doesn't need you then, basically.
She doesn't need me at all. I bought it without seeing it, which is probably not the wisest thing to do, but it was just a case of I got fed up of looking. And on paper, it's like, yeah, that sounds a sensible buy, but it was just, it's a one-owner car, full service history, 30,000 miles on it, absolutely split mint, and cars that had 60,000 more miles on were going at the same price. So I just thought, you know what, if nothing else, it makes economic sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense.
It's good on fuel. Can't grumble on that front of anything else. It's just very, very plasticky inside. And a bit, it feels flimsy. The old 7 used to feel big and solid and very, very stable. This feels more twitchy and lightweight and plasticky all round. But I have no doubt that when the weather's decent and the roof is down, I will enjoy it. Yeah. And I'll probably love it then. But at the moment, I'm just like, it'll do. It does what it needs to do.
Yeah. And you'll be able to get where you need to go, most importantly, right?
That's it. Back on the road as of next week, yeah. And okay. Now my wife, I used to think I scheduled my diary quite tight. Now my wife manages my diary. I think she's trying to get rid of me.
Oh, man.
She had me out for 2 appointments this morning. Okay. She's got me out from Wednesday morning to Saturday morning on appointments, nonstop, stopping over.
Wow.
And it's like, bloody hell.
So that's cool, man. Yeah. You guys are working together. She's helping you out more now. And she's actually scheduling stuff for you. That's great.
Yeah, she started messaging clients last week, and she messaged a lot here because quite a lot of my clients I'll speak through on Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
Some are WhatsApp, some are text, some are phone call. You know, everyone has their own, which they prefer to communicate by.
Right, right.
And she started messaging people last night, and they was like, oh, what's up to Dave? Where's Dave? Is Dave all right? She's like, yeah, no, I'm just scheduling his diary for him now and trying to make things a bit more efficient that way.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Well, it just makes like, I mean, I'm still doing this court report. I think we're at 146 pages now. Hang on, I'll tell you exactly because it's here still sat on the screen. We are at 168 pages and 33,000, put my glasses on.
Yeah.
33,374 words.
Jeez. It doesn't sound like fun to me. It doesn't sound very bodybuilding. I'd rather lift some weights and talk about chicken and rice and D-ball.
That has sucked my will to live, as that report. But I'm nearly done, to be fair. Probably a couple of days now and it'll be finished.
Hey, I got a kind of a weird segue here. First of all, is that your dog I hear snoring in the background? I hear the sound every once in a while. Is he the bulldog in there?
Yes, he is.
Oh my God. I hear it all the time. I don't know if the listeners hear it. I think it's hilarious. So he really tears it up, huh?
He's got a pulley toe.
He what?
He's stubbed his toe. He's got a pulley toe. He stubbed his claw on his toe and he's limping on one foot.
Oh, poor guy.
But he's laid in the middle of the office floor snoring his head off.
So, and here's my segue. I use a CPAP and my mask, the strap on it broke a couple days ago. My voice, I don't know if you can tell, I'm like a little hoarse right now. I it's a good thing that I sleep alone because I would feel terrible for anybody other than my dog had to deal with it, but she snores too. I mean, I must have sounded terrible last night because my throat is like all tore up today. Thankfully, I work with one of my clients is a respiratory therapist, and she rummaged around through the back room, and they had an open package of the mask that I need, which if I bought it on Amazon, it was going to be like $150. So this was something that they weren't going to use. It was basically going to go to the wayside. So as of this morning, thankfully, I got a new mask. I'll be able to sleep well again. But you don't miss something like that until you don't have it. Believe me, man, it was a rough night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to use mine much now. I generally only need it if I've got a cold or something that's restricting my breathing to some degree. But fully agree with you. When you do need it, you feel it the next day. You notice how much more tired you are.
So how much weight now did you have to get off you before you actually realized you didn't need it anymore? Because you're still a big guy, regardless.
Yeah. I mean, I think once I dropped under 360, once I dropped down to about 330, 340, 330, I don't have an issue now. In fact, my sleep at the moment, apart from last night, because I was grinding my teeth all night where I killed the world in my sleep. there were some very, very creative deaths last night, I must admit.
Oh, man.
I'm probably sleeping now the best I've slept in the last 15 years.
Nice. And what are you weighing now? We haven't done a weight check-in in a while.
I haven't got a clue.
Okay, so you're not paying close attention.
Oh, I mean, I am dieting. I've actually put 20 minutes of cardio in every day.
Really?
Not a big amount, and I appreciate it's not a large amount. I'm not a big cardio fan, and I do find it very tedious. So rather than extend the cardio period, I'm upping the cardio intensity.
Okay. So you're doing like, are you doing like a HIIT type thing or what do you got going on?
Not yet, but I'm building into it.
Okay.
So just I'm increasing the pace and then I'll, at the moment it's just treadmill work, but then I'll increase, probably move on to a stepper or across, you know, more intense exercise and just continue then to increase the intensity in the cardio rather than do long cardio and get bored.
Oh, yeah.
Keep it shorter, but more intense. So I've started cardio every day, which is fine. I think any more than that, and I'd struggle, but I can just about put up with that without going crazy.
Now, is this like first thing in the morning or post-workout?
Post-workout, but still first thing in the morning. So I generally train about 7 in the morning fasted.
Okay.
No real science behind that, just because I get up and I can't be arsed, and I just fall out of bed, drag the eldest son out of bed to go to work.
Yeah.
Literally just drive to the gym and train. So I do it post that. So I'll be there again tomorrow. And then just get back into my day. So my working day starts at like 9 o'clock when I'm back from the gym and I've had my first meal and I come down into the office and I start work.
That's a good feeling. You're probably more, I like to do AM fasted cardio. I train later, but it's a good feeling when you get to work and you've done that physical activity and you've eaten and now you're like settled in, right?
Yeah. My big problem was I'd get into something. And you know, someone would message with a problem or something that was a bit unusual. And the next thing I realized, I'm too far gone to be able to get to the gym.
Oh yeah.
I'm just that into what I'm doing, or I ended up behind on something else, and then I've got to get that finished. So I started with this policy of just get it done in the morning, get it out of the way. Then it doesn't matter what the day throws at me.
I like that. That makes sense, too.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how the day goes then, because I've done what I need to do. It's done. It's out of the way.
Hell yeah. Hey, other news I wanted to mention to you. We got sponsorship for Advices Radio now.
Wonderful. When do I get my check?
Well, we're not that far yet, but they are helping me get these shows out, which is great. True Nutrition. They jumped on board. So I'm very excited, and they're going to help us get the shows out on, you know, a regular basis. Cause we put out so much stuff, you know, it's like, I'm just really grateful to have a company like them standing behind us. And, you know, one other thing, what was it I wanted to mention? Oh, I talked to, now I know you don't know him very well yet, Dr. Dean St. Mart. He works with Jordan Peters. You know who he is. And he's part of Youth Revisited as well. So you guys are, at this point, he just started working with them. You guys are kind of like, I guess, co-workers or colleagues. Co-consultants, is that maybe a good word?
Yeah, the company, I spoke to the company, I think it was last week, they sent me a message to say that Dean had started with them, and I'll have to actually go out of my way, and I don't, what, this sounds probably awful, and it probably almost sounds a little bit arrogant, and it isn't at all, but I tend not to watch any podcasts or really listen to anybody else, and it's more just a time issue.
I know what you mean, man. I do.
It is more just a physical time issue, and I have enough trouble in the car getting the radio to play, let alone streaming a podcast through my phone to listen on the stereo when I'm driving down the road. So it's more, but I will have to. But yes, he has joined the company. And my understanding is he's a very, very knowledgeable individual.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he's a qualified doctor as well, which always helps.
Right. And he's not too far from you. He's how long of a trip would that be to get to Ireland from where you're at?
No, flight time is probably only an hour. Ferry time, I think's 4 or 5 if you wanted to drive.
Okay. No, I was just curious because it's, you know, I've never been anywhere over there. So he's not, I mean, relatively, he's not super far from you. Yeah, he's a smart dude though, man. I'd be interested to hear you guys talk sometimes. You both have different approaches, and I think that you know, when you take two different approaches, you'll inform one another. It's cool. I don't know if I'm totally 100% on board with everything we talked about that he said, but he got me thinking, and I think that's, you know, what's cool.
It's very, very healthy to speak to people with opposing opinions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think if you're going to be objective, you have to be challenged. And at the end of the day, I'm sure, well, I don't know, Dean does have a few supplements, I believe, so maybe he is trying to sell something, but I've got nothing to sell, so it's very healthy for me to speak to people that challenge my way of thinking and make me question what I believe.
Yeah.
Because it causes me to then go back and say, well, you know, do they have a point? Am I right in my thinking, or what's his point? All right, let's have a look at that point. And I'm happy to be proven wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I want to further my knowledge. I'm not bothered if I'm – I'd like to be right, and I'd like to be right because I want to give correct information out. But that's the thing. I want to give correct information out. And if someone shows me that my thinking is errored, or I've missed something, or actually, you know, this is now shown as a – this works in this way, then it's all learning. So it's all good to me. So, yeah, I mean, I would rather have a conversation with someone who challenges what I think than have a conversation with someone who agrees with what I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what you're telling me is, at the end of the day, the most important thing is that you are able to help people. That's more important than your ego and being right about something, right?
Well, we all like to be right.
Yeah.
No one likes to be wrong, but I have no vested interest in being right, in the sense that it's not an issue if I'm wrong. I mean, I've been wrong about loads of stuff over the years, and if you watch some of my early videos, you'll see I'm saying stuff now that's completely different to what I said then.
Really? Give me an example. What's something that you've flipped the switch, or, you know, flipped your position on, where you because I've done the same thing, and I know I'm putting you on
certain things at certain things at the moment seem stupid. When I look back at them and think, well, what was I thinking? I mean, prime example, I'm a great believer in if you run in cycles to run HCG throughout the cycle.
Okay.
I feel long term it's the most preventive way of protecting testicular function.
Okay.
But go back 5 years and I've said, oh, it's a waste of time. Just do your HCG. I'd have just pushed PCT and do HCG and PCT.
Okay. Yeah.
So stuff like that. I changed my mind massively on the influence of growth hormone and insulin.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one for you.
Yeah. Big one. In fact, it's something that Luke Sandow messaged me this week because, obviously, as you know, I contribute to Brutal Muscle, the online magazine that Luke runs with Ben Chow. Yeah.
Right, right.
And Luke messaged. Now, we and Luke, we've talked about it. It came up in a forum question on the site. And Luke messaged me and said, we talked about it a bit more, and he'd done some reading from Dan Duchesne. And actually, I didn't know this, that Dan actually sort of got a similar thought process as I have about it. Not quite exactly the same, but the general gist at the end of the day is very, very similar. And he asked me to do, he asked me last week to do a video about it that he could put up, and he's been pushing that all over the place at the moment. But that seems to have rattled a few cages.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting, man. So everything's going good over there. We talked about the start of Brutal Muscle. You were going to be involved with it. Sounds like it's plugging along now.
Yeah, I mean, it's still early days. They're still growing content. There's lots of things planned in the pipeline. I'm not sure what I can and can't discuss, to be quite honest.
Oh, okay. I won't push too hard. I will say this, though. Luke is coming to the Arnold. Columbus. And I know you're too busy, but I still want to try to like make you feel bad. Are you coming, Dave, to hang out with us at the Arnold? I know.
What's better? Do I say yes and then make an excuse the week before? No, and get it over and done with now.
I know you're busy, man. I know. It would be awesome. I do hope we can hang out one day. But yeah, Luke is coming out here. Is he talking about that on the Brutal Muscle, I assume?
Yeah, they've got several athletes. They all put content up with regards to training and diet, and they all have their own separate forums when you can chat to them specifically about what they do.
That's cool.
And then we're just starting a workout section where you can see written plans of what the various athletes use for their training sessions.
Okay.
We have a little WhatsApp group, and so we were chatting, discussing this in the WhatsApp group, and Luke, I said, look, I've got a few I can throw if you want. And Luke was like, well, you're a bit of a hitman, aren't you? I said, no, not really. I said, yeah, I'm more of a phase training sort of person. I believe in periodization and you know, certain aspects of training.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right. And so we got talking about Josh Malley was saying, you know, he'd like to bring his arms up a little bit. And so we ended up then discussing about putting together a training session that we're going to video for the page.
Oh, really?
So we'll see if it comes off or not, but we're looking at possibly doing it at Muscle Works in Orpington.
Oh, nice.
And I won't be physically training because I'm knackered and can't do it anymore. I ain't throwing at him with them two. They can piss off. They're 20 years bloody younger than me. But no, about taking them through some technique works and working on Josh with his arms and working on Luke with a few exercises. Just showing them different ways, you know, and just broaden. So we might get some content up on that, hopefully sometime not too far away.
Oh, dude, that'd be a fun video. That would be some great material, too.
That'd probably be cool. Laugh as well, yeah.
That'd be cool. I suggest, though, I want to see you back up at 415 and shoulder pressing with those guys and out pressing them, everything else. No, not going to happen?
No. We're not even going to have that conversation at the moment.
fair enough.
I'm mourning enough for my lack of power and size these days. Let's not bring it up anymore.
In that case, let's do this. We got to make this one a quicker show. We do have a good handful of questions. Let's run to a commercial break. And when we get back, let's tackle the rest of the questions we had from our Facebook thread the other week. Sound good?
No problem.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a second. Hey, guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. Hey guys, I wanted to take this break to say thanks to Dave for everything he's doing here at ADVICES Radio, and thanks to Dave for everything he's doing for bodybuilding as a whole. You guys can check out more of his stuff. Go visit his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professions, as well as advice to individual users. You guys can also check Dave out on his YouTube page, which is in the show notes, and also go to underconstructionthefilm.com to purchase the films today. Use the code ADVICES25 for a discount. All right, guys, and we are back. Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. Dave is holding it together over there, even though his computer monitors have to be returned. The car insurance company is giving him a hassle, and I'm giving him crap because telling him he should be 415 again, which I don't really believe that, Dave. I'm happy to have you healthy where you are.
I'm just happy to be alive.
Yes.
That's about us these days.
I'm looking at the thread we had posted the other week. We did answer this guy's questions. He had a bunch. He had three or four of them all in one response. One thing we didn't talk about, and we haven't talked a lot about yet, was acne. And he was wondering about your thoughts on dealing with acne, in relation to AAS. You had some issues at one point, but that was more like a reaction, right?
The more common causes of acne issues are hormone imbalance, so the balance between estrogen and testosterone, increased oily skin due to the effect DHT has on sebaceous glands in the skin that produce more oil.
Yeah.
Obviously, adding to that, the fact that we train and we sweat. So there's all those conditions as well. But also on top of that, I had bad issues, but they were only facial, which was a bit of a shitter really, because there was no way you could hide it.
Yeah.
But mine were caused from central nervous system stress.
Okay.
And that was initially triggered by the gear, the dosage, and the period of time that I'd been on. But continued afterwards, even though all that was removed, for quite some time. I don't have a major issue anymore, but if I get particularly run down, I will get a slight flare up.
Okay.
If anyone's seen the YouTube video, I do look like something out of a horror film. It is horrendous, the level of what just looks like massive boils all over my face.
Well, two things. It wasn't great, but and I think we always see, we're always most critical on ourselves, A, and B, the other people who are most critical of us are people who comment on YouTube. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it wasn't a good look. Yeah. I wasn't winning no beauty awards with it. These days, if I get an outbreak because I'm overworked or sort of overstressed or run down, it will be just a couple of lumps.
Okay.
they're not really even spots as such. They just redden and just go up, and then they'll calm back down a few days later. But it's all central nervous system related.
We never talk about that, man.
Stress related.
Yeah, we never talk about that, stress-related acne. We always go to, well, the DHT and the oil. We never talk about the central nervous system.
And we sort of forget that just in what we do, we put a huge amount of stress, both physical but also emotional. I mean, you know, a lot of guys will fixate about their weight or their condition or their performance in the gym, and it's something that's constantly running in the back of their heads. And I just stress that we don't consider, and all those things can have an effect on our skins. And obviously good hydration, toxicity of whatever our diets and that side of things, all that, you know, are you getting plenty of vegetables in your diet? Are you getting plenty of clean fluids in your diet? Plus the gear. There's a lot of factors can drive acne. And the problem with that is it's not always easy to diagnose the best route of treatment.
Okay.
One of the starting points is hygiene. And it just might mean that you might need to be a little bit over the top with a cleaning regime of scrubbing and facial cleansing or whichever part of your body is affected than you would normally.
Couldn't agree more.
And one of the big problems I had was when I used to drive, and obviously I drive quite long distances and quite a lot, I'd sit with my arm on the window and my fingers on my forehead, just sort of rubbing my forehead or just sort of touching my face somewhere.
Yeah.
And if I had an element of a bit of a lump or a spot that was coming, I'd end up playing with it. And that would just aggravate the problem. And all the time I'm just running oil and stuff across my scalp and you know, ingraining dirt into my scalp from the end of my fingers and everything else. And so it didn't help the situation. So I would start always with a hygiene regime. And then just be mindful of things that you might be doing that might be worsening the condition. Beyond that, then you've just got to start looking at drug protocols and you know, how the high dose you're running, what's your issue management like, and what's your fluid intake like, what's your vegetable intake like, and all these sort of things. I mean, there's quite a lot of treatments you can get. Obviously, a lot go for Accutane.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
It's rough stuff.
Yeah.
It is effective, but it is also, I mean, Priestway, there's been that many problems with suicide from people using Accutane that the NHS actually reviewed the medication and considered banning it.
Oh, wow.
Because there's a high percentage of suicide thoughts supported with people who use Accutane. But I know a lot of people that use it and use it quite well as well. And also you've got to remember that if someone's driven to use an Accutane, they are at a position where they're quite down anyway about their acne levels.
Okay.
But it's not the easiest drug to get on with. Side effects are pretty harsh, incredibly dry lips, incredibly dry skin, to the point where lips crack and become sore. Severe depression can be caused by using the drug. So it's definitely not a drug you want to jump on lightly. You know, don't be thinking, oh, I've got a few spots, I'll take Accutane. That ain't the way to go.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. If you've got an absolute eruption all the way across your back and you can't really lay down because you're in pain when you do, then, yeah, that may be where you need to be. But don't be looking at jumping Accutane just because you've picked up a few spots on your forehead and you're paranoid about them, because that definitely is overkill. It's not a drug to piss about with lightly. But used correctly and sensibly, it can be very effective.
Okay.
But I would always start with the non-medication alternatives to start with and work your way up to something that strong.
Yeah, I think you're right about that first step. That the hygiene thing, you could do a lot with that alone. Like, you can get so anal retentive with it, changing your sheets every day or every other day. You know what else, too? Like, guys will wear a tank top to the gym, or as you guys call it, what do you guys call it? A jumper. No, wait, the jumper is the jacket, right?
Vest.
A vest, yeah. So you wear a vest to the gym, but then you wear like a sweat jacket over that, You might wear that several days in a row. Don't forget that oil's getting inside of the jacket and, you know, getting re-put back on your skin constantly. It's easy to get like a recontamination, you know?
Well, it's the same way with like people suffering with trench sweat.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, you're literally going to be having to change your bedding every bloody day. And people don't. And it's not that they're dirty. It's just that it's abnormal to have to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the one thing I've noticed more so these days is that people, I don't know if it's the same over there, but it's something I've noticed over here. More people don't use the changing rooms at the gym.
You're right. They just come right in, train and leave.
I drive down, I train, I drive home, and then I jump in the shower at home.
Yeah.
But that means I'm sitting in a car with a sweaty back, putting sweat all over the seats in the car, which I'm then jumping back into later on that day.
In your new car?
In any car. Yeah. But yes, in my new to me, not new.
Right.
But, you know, and the stuff like that. And I know there's some days where that period of finishing training to actually getting showers ended up being a couple of hours.
Right.
Well, that's going to do your skin no good, sitting in sweaty, stinking clothes for a couple of hours.
Right.
So, you know, there's all these areas where, I don't know why, but 20, 30 years ago when I trained, it was gym, shower, changed, out. Now a lot more people seem to change at home. But all that time, you're not in a good environment for keeping healthy skin. So these are all considerations you need to look at before you start just reaching for a drug.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've got another one here. This is a Dear Davey question, actually. Typically horny bodybuilder, especially when on cycle. My fiance is less inclined to have sex than me. She's happy for a couple times a month. And typically I end up nagging to get some of that ass. Just seeing what he said. Any tips on how to improve her sex drive or anything I can give her to improve it, even if it means slipping it in her drink or food without her noticing? He adds a LOL to that. So I think he's joking. I hope he's joking. He says, I want to try and rectify this before I marry her next year.
No, sorry. Okay.
Somebody commented that Rohypnol, maybe that was their first comment. And of course we're joking.
Rohypnol wipes.
Unless she wants to take it. Some people take it on purpose.
I know of a legal case where there were a consensual partners that used to take Rohypnol or chloroform.
Oh, wow. Chloroform?
Yes. Sex. And one of them died.
Whoa.
Been on trial for murder.
Whew.
Anyway, we're digressing.
Yes.
PT-141 is probably the easiest, most sensible, and safest option. However, he may consider being romantic. He may consider a meal and a box of chocolates and a glass of wine. He may consider actually being attentive and getting her in the mood instead of considering the sort of rape option that he seems to be going for.
You're right.
Yes, I mean, it does happen, and sex drives do increase from drug use, and some people's sex drives do actually get to a point where it's problematic. And it can be very taxing on a partner, particularly if you're not in the mood 24/7.
Sure.
From a chemical point of view, PT-141 will definitely improve her sexual appetite. It's a peptide. It's the element within MT2 that makes you horny.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yes.
So that is the chemical route, really. Otherwise, obviously, there's female Viagra as well.
Is there really? I didn't know that.
But I would suggest that, one is probably the best way, actually, so that you, it is a little, right, if you're going to be clandestine about this and you're going to be a little bit sneaky about this, suggest that she gets on MT2 and improves her tan, because obviously the side effect of MT2 is increased sexual desire, and possibly just make a little bit more effort.
Yeah, I like the more effort part. And I, you know what, I wonder, okay, so he's telling us this. Has he, first of all, has he told her this? Have they had this conversation, you know?
I think they would just be the general, I would assume the general conversation is going to be that he's a bit of a sex pest, and she's like, oh, just fuck off, leave me alone.
Yeah. That's not a good, that's like a dynamic that continues. That's like, once you're going down that road, and I could speak from personal experience, it's not a, it doesn't lead to a good place. You know what I mean?
It's like, it's in all seriousness, let's be, you know, if you're considering drugging your partner to have sex, even in the mildest forms, that's not really where you want to be, is it?
Right, right.
But all joking aside, I suggest you find a bathroom and get busy.
Well, I think, I mean, that might be an option, right? My thought.
You know, I understand. And, you know, some guys really do get it bad.
Yeah.
To the point where they get aggressive because they're frustrated because they are that horny constantly. But if your partner hasn't that level of sexual desire, then you just need to find relief. And that's either change the drugs.
Yeah,
hey, that's what's driving the sex drive.
That's an option, right? That's a good point.
And if that's not what you're willing to do, then it's self-pleasure, isn't it? Because what else are you going to do? You know, a side chick isn't really an option.
Yeah.
It's just not healthy. It's not where you want to be going. If that's the situation, then you want to be single and just playing the, you know, playing the grinder game or the Tinder game or whatever, you know, plenty of fish. You definitely don't want to be in a relationship if all you're interested in is busting your nuts all the time.
Or maybe it is. Maybe she's totally, who knows? We don't know these guys. Maybe she's totally cool with it. Maybe she's like, yeah, just do your thing. Because there are people, and I'm not one of them, but there are people that are like, hey, just don't, I'm not going to ask. You don't tell me. And we do everything we do in our relationship. And as long as it doesn't take away, you know, you just.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, I can't wrap my head around it either.
No, I know. I can understand the partner saying, look, you're highly sexually drive. Go in the toilet, sort yourself out, because you're not getting it four times a day.
Yeah.
I fully understand that. But to say go find it somewhere else, that just doesn't make sense to me. But each to their own. You know, whatever. Each to their own.
Yeah. And just because his sex drive goes up doesn't mean it's that she is now demanded. You know what I mean? To keep up with that, right?
I mean, this is, I mean, all joking aside, you've got to start thinking, well, this isn't really the right approach to this. Well, I'm horny, so I want more sex, so you must provide it me. Whoa, hang on a minute. This is a pay-per-view service.
right.
And on the slip side of that, what happens when he comes off cycle, his PCT doesn't work very well, and he has got no sex drive, and then she wants it. Is it all right for her to drug him?
Good point.
It goes both ways. So talk. In all seriousness, talk. If there is a genuine problem, talk.
It's uncomfortable to talk about that stuff sometimes, you know?
It is difficult. I mean, it is a difficult conversation to turn around to your partner and say, look, I'm horny all the time. You don't want it. So I'm getting frustrated by that. Now, so I'm going to go in the toilet and play with myself for 10 minutes. You know, but what else can you do? It's far better that than cheating on her or trying to drug her or,
yeah,
you know. I mean, if she's consensual, if it's like, you know what, I'm just not in the mood. And if he says, well, look, if you take this, you will be in the mood. And she may be, oh, that's fine. Then, yeah, I'm up for that. Then fine. That's a different scenario.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right, though. Like the foundation is talk about it and figure it out together, you know. But, yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one to – I don't know why, but you can be so close in a relationship to somebody. But then if things aren't clicking right with sex, it can be tough to tell somebody that, you know. So
it's a difficult subject because it's something that – I think questions our base of our sexuality as an individual.
Mm, yeah.
you know, as a man, we should be able to perform, and all men have great difficulty in discussing the fact if they can't.
Sure.
And they're probably more comfortable discussing it with another man than they're actually discussing it with the partner, because there's a fear then that you're not good enough for them.
Oh, right, right.
But women are the same, though, and I think men forget this sometimes. Women are just as paranoid to a large degree that they don't sexually satisfy their partner.
I think, too, you know what? Women function differently than men. Not all of them. Not all of them. There are some women out there, and I'm not a sex therapist, so I should put that out there first, you know? But I do think that, like you said, you know, women might need, you got to plant a seed, a little bit of romance in there. You can't just be like, hey, I'm on trend and I want to fuck, you know? I mean, it might work, but...
The whole conversation of that question, just the whole line of that question, very much sounds like he is on trend.
Right, right, right.
Because there's that element of, I don't really care as long as I get what I want in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I do think as well that for women, sex is, in general, more emotional.
Yeah.
And I think women attach more emotion to sex than men do, where men, it can be very much a physical thing.
Yeah.
And I know women, I've known of women that have felt extremely betrayed if their partners self-satisfy themselves.
I've heard that too, yeah.
Where the man themselves is like, well, no, it's just a physical urge that I'm getting rid of.
Yeah.
I'm not even thinking of really anybody. I'm just doing it because I've got the physical urge to do it.
Yeah, I've known women that would consider that like almost kind of going toward cheating if they were,
yeah,
you know, say looking at porn or something like that.
Well, I mean, obviously porn can... You're in a bit of a gray area there, aren't you? Because you're using another female's physical appearance to stimulate your sexual desire.
Dave, it's just half naked pics of girls on Instagram that you actually know. No, that now you're crossing the line there. But I feel like if it's porn, like just generic porn out there in the world, and it's not a problem, because I think you can get like really... You can take yourself into a really bad place with that too. But is it cheating though? If it's just generic porn, people you don't know, it's just fantasy.
All right. Let me put it this way. How would you feel if you walked in on your partner playing with herself, watching a video of Jason Momoa?
You know what? Truthfully, I'd be like, oh, hey, what's going on? Let's see where it went.
Obviously some guys would they? Some guys and the one thing out of all this is what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So you've got to be willing to let this run both ways.
Yeah. No, so
I actually have a friend who is addicted to sex.
Badly. Really? Really?
Yeah, I won't say too much because I don't want anyone to put together who he is. I don't think they will because he's not involved in our world.
Okay.
But he literally bought an iPad device purely for his porn.
Really? Huh.
And he was several times a day, every day.
So does he use gear?
No, no.
Okay, so that's just straight up natural...
He's got an incredibly high sex drive, and unfortunately his partner hasn't the same level of drive. And we've discussed at length, and he's discussed at length, because he's a very open person in that way. He's quite happy to challenge himself and discuss these things. Is it being unfaithful? I think we got to the point where it was, well, if your partner would be disturbed by it, whether it is unfaithful or not, it's not good.
Mm, yeah.
Because you're hurting the person you're claiming to love.
Yeah. And if it takes away, you know, from something that could have been, if you're taking energy away that could have been invested in sex with your partner, that's obviously not going to be a good thing, right?
Yeah, I suppose like a lot of things as well, when you start, because he said there was a period of time when he got into it that he started to get, the stuff he was watching was getting darker and more extreme.
Yeah, that's a warning sign right there, you know.
Because After a while, the normal stuff was just boring and normal and didn't really do it for him anymore.
Hmm.
And so it was slowly starting to get more extreme, which is when at the point he started to take control of it and pull it back a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Good move.
With regards to the question, the original question, get off the trend.
There you go. Hey, what was this guy's name? Jason what? This guy in the that my significant other is watching it. What's his name? Because I didn't know who that was.
Aquaman.
Oh, Aquaman. Okay, yeah. I see. I don't watch movies. Yeah, yeah. That's fine.
What do you mean you don't watch movies?
That's fine. I mean, I watched Under Construction, but that's the kind of movies I watch. I don't watch like real movies like in the theater. I watch like, you know.
Why not?
Because I talk to you. This is what I do. I talk on podcasts. That's why.
Scott, you need to get out more, mate. You really think, do.
You'd think. But no, I don't. So I wouldn't have a problem with that. This Aquaman. It's not. Now, if it was
now,
like some other dude, like the guy from the gym that we talk to every day, then I might be a little concerned. You know what I mean?
When it becomes a personal attachment, there's a difference. When it becomes something that's unrealistic, I suppose there's an element of detachment there, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. So but I guess you guys would have to discuss that. And I mean, we keep coming back to communication.
By the way, Aquaman's a shit superhero.
I heard they made him into something though. Like they really—that's what the word was. They made this movie good. Was it? Am I wrong? Or?
I haven't seen it, actually. I believe it's quite an entertaining film. But, I mean, he swims and he gets pissed. How is that a superhero?
Well, apparently he's hot.
Shit superpowers go, talking with fish, swimming, and drinking Jack Daniels isn't really up there, is it?
Well, apparently he's attractive, so he's got that going for him.
Yeah, I suppose so. Bastard.
All right, I'll go to the next question here. It says, if cycles are done correctly with proper PCT, will your ability to produce natural test still be there? Or will all cases of kind of a weird question, prolonged PED use lead to needing? Yeah. He's asking some more like if you stay on a long time, will you need HRT for life?
Currently, statistically, we're looking at around 70-75% of all long-term users will become TRT dependent.
Wow. Okay.
That's the last numbers that came out of Pope. Looking at about 70-75% of all users will become chemically dependent from a TRT point of view. Also, very interestingly, they looked at around 70% of all users would have some form of mental dependency as well.
Okay.
So we'd develop a relationship with gear that was unhealthy. I know very few long-term users that have continued to use PCT successfully throughout. And even guys back that I know used to use, they all seem to be jumping onto TRT at around the same sort of age where, so I think if we actually, I've not looked into it, but I think if you looked into it, you'd find that even users that finished 20 years ago, they're coming onto TRT at a lot younger age than people that have never used. So, I mean, I've spoke to a few sort of old retired pros that haven't used in 15, 20 years, and then they're all now sort of hitting 50, 51, 52, and they're all having to go on TRT.
Mm.
Now, it's not unusual for someone at 51, 52 to go on TRT, but statistically, it would appear that those levels or those numbers of people at that age are higher in ex-users than they are in non-users, those that have never used.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, for most, it's going to be an eventuality.
And that, you know what, too, once you start, too, it's not like we're talking just one cycle. So it's a commitment. You know what I mean?
When we're talking people that have used, you know, 5, 6, 7 cycles over a period of 3 to 5 years, sort of that level plus of usage.
Yeah.
One or two cycles, I haven't got any figures on it. I have no knowledge on that basis, but I would suspect that the risks are obviously a lot lower. And unfortunately, you know, very few people start off cycling in a manner that's designed to prevent the eventuality of that. You know, if you were, you would start on HCG from your very first cycle, run it throughout every single cycle you ever did.
Yeah.
Because it's the Leydig cells which are the main point of disruption. Pituitary disruption isn't as common. It happens, but it's not as common. So generally, your FSH and LH production will return, but your Leydig cells just won't respond.
Okay.
So they're the area that's most vulnerable. I think as science continues, we may see the development of a peptide inhibin and a peptide activin. And what that could potentially do, that could potentially mean that we could actually force testosterone production to remain even with exogenous testosterone in.
Okay.
But that requires activins in a peptide version, I would suspect, to be produced that will remain that gateway open at the testes.
Or maybe they'll come out with like even a new generation of SARM that, because I mean, SARMs are, so they were supposed to not shut you down, right? They're selective, well, but they still, people get shut down.
The more they've tried to develop SARMs, the more problems they seem to have encountered.
Oh, really?
So they do have SARMs that are tissue selective. We have got that bit. They do have SARMs that have a much lower impact when it comes to shutdown, which would at certain doses be regarded as negligible. But we haven't got one that does everything.
Okay.
And the more they've tried to get one that does everything, the more they seem to have ended up with problems, which is why we continually get this spin-off of different SARMs coming out, because that's what's being created when they try and develop alternatives.
I see.
So the last big one to hit was, I think, YK11, which is built on the back of a steroid backbone.
And that was definitely not any easier on you than Osterine, right?
No. From my understanding, and this is second hand, so I can't say that this is 100%, the vast majority of companies researching SARMs have stepped away.
Okay.
There's only a couple that are pushing through. And there are a few that are being pushed through as well, but the vast majority have stepped away and moved on to other things because they just don't think the return's going to be at the end of it, and they're looking down another avenue now.
It doesn't sound promising.
Yeah, I think there may be something in looking at activins.
That was that question was from Andy Timothy Doyle. That's a very UK sounding name to me.
What, because of the double barrel?
It just does. It sounds UK. And yep, he looks like he might play rugby. It's a rough sport, man. Do you ever play rugby? We don't do that at all here. We have like zero rugby.
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing is I played rugby at what would be classed as a state level.
Okay.
I played county level. And I've played American football at a high school level.
Okay.
And believe it or not, the American football was rougher.
Really? We have more pads. There's that.
Well, the thing is, the difference is with the rugby is quite fast-paced and it's constantly moving.
Okay.
And the only time you're at any real risk is if you've got the ball. Because no one's going to hit you if you haven't got the ball.
Okay.
Where in American football, you can get fucked up just standing there.
Everybody's getting hit. You're right.
And I've played both. And even with all the pads, you know, getting hit in rugby is incidental, so to speak, an attempt to tackle you and stop forward movement of the ball. Getting hit in American football is an intent to hit you.
To end your life is what it's an attempt to.
Yeah. You know, and movements like the rip and such like are all designed to basically incapacitate you so you can no longer move.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And yes, the pads help. Yes, the pads are comfortable, but it's the very challenging games in very different ways.
I could see that. I could see what you mean too. From what I've seen of rugby, it continues moving. There's probably a lot more cardio involved in that too.
It's, don't get me wrong, it is a hard-hitting, rough game.
Well, those guys pile on top of each other, and it looks nuts.
Yeah, it is, and it is violent, and it is probably, well, I mean, I don't know, because I didn't get to a high standard of American football. I would imagine that, you know, in both games, at pro level, there's a lot of dirty shit goes on that you don't see.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, same in rugby, in the scrums, there's elbows and heads and foreheads and headbutts going in and stuff like that. But the impact is more done and over with.
Yeah.
Where the American football, you know, if you're defense, you're just getting hit after hit after hit after hit.
That's all you do. Yeah.
Yeah, continuously. So that's the difference. So, yes, the pads help, but it's a much more physical, enduring game in the form of impact. So they both have their pluses and minuses.
Huh. I'm going to go to David Jackson. We were talking about SARMs and kind of like the future. This is kind of related to the future. Are myostatin inhibitors effective in humans? Do you know of anyone that has tried them?
There's people that I suspect have tried them, but I don't know that they have.
Okay.
Myostatin inhibitors are, the first thing we need to remember about this is the myostatin inhibitor is a live bio drug. It's created by harvesting antibodies from mice spleens.
Huh.
So it's not a drug that can be cloned or copied because each one is each drug is specific to where it's been harvested.
Okay.
So these peptidic versions are a pile of shit.
Huh.
They will have no real world effect. YK11 was shown to inhibit myostatin to some degree, but its real world impact is just not there. Okay. Simple as, just not there.
Okay.
So a real treatment with this stuff is going to be very expensive. It's a live biological drug, so you're going to have something that's going to be permanently refrigerated. They do, or they can work, and there are drugs in existence that will work. The problem is we have lots of different types of myostatin, and they are all used to regulate growth of different parts of our body. Now, there were some cases a long, long time ago of people taking, I think it was rabbit were myostatin. And it was very, very close to human. What happened was the body created antibodies to attack the rabbit myostatin. When that was done, those antibodies then attacked the human myostatin. The problem was it wasn't myostatin selective, and as a result, yeah, they got bigger and their muscle grows, but all their internal organs grew as well.
Oh.
But it was fatal. It did prove to be fatal. So the issue with myostatin suppressants is not really about switching or suppressing myostatin. It's about suppressing the right one so that only muscle tissue will grow.
Okay.
Now, I suspect, and I might be barking completely up the wrong tree here, but I suspect that Dallas McCarver had a play.
You think so, huh?
Just the enlargement of his internal organs, his lungs were enlarged, his liver was enlarged, his kidney was enlarged. His heart. That isn't really drug-specific to any of the drugs we normally use. And that, to me, made me think. I'm not saying definitely, I don't know, but I just have a feeling that he may have had some attempt at a myostatin protocol.
I mean, he got huge, that's for sure.
He did, and relatively rapidly as well.
I mean, if I had option, if it was an option, if I knew people, you know, I can imagine I'd want to try it if I was in a position like that. I feel like anybody would if they had the opportunity, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you can get one that's correct live tissue selective, then literally you're going to grow sitting on your armchair.
I'll take
that's the power of that stuff. And I think that will be the next miracle breakthrough drug.
Okay.
And that is something that there is a lot of quite a few pharma companies are researching and pushing for a true myostatin inhibitor. Hmm. Because there's some strong real-world applications in medicine.
Hmm.
Against, you know, muscle wasting disorders and such like.
Yeah, yeah. But as of now, though, we don't have it, is what you're saying. It's not there.
I think there are some experimental versions that you, if you knew the right people and you had big, deep enough pockets, you could probably get your hands on.
I gotcha.
But I wouldn't know how safe they were.
Okay.
I mean, I know some of the drugs are going into trials at various levels, so there may potentially be one out there. At the end of the day, it's only a case of enough money and the right person, and that drug will become available to somebody.
Okay. I've got one. It ties in a little bit to our previous question. He sent this to me privately. Wants to remain anonymous, but he says, my girl wants to try Cialis to see how it works on women. Can women try it to spike their libido?
Well, yeah. I mean, they can. It doesn't always work, but they can do. There's going to be no harm from that. And so there isn't going to be a major issue from that.
But now I know for men, I've known guys that have had issues. Say you've done post-psycho, your test isn't working right. They take Viagra and they say, hey, now it physically works, but I still don't have the desire. Is that I imagine that would still be part of it, right?
Yeah, it'd be similar, yeah. I mean, like I said, if you're looking for a chemical to aid female intention,
yeah,
you can't go far wrong with that PT-141. It's actually really good at it.
Okay.
And if you struggle to get hold of that, then just MT2.
Get a good tan in the process.
Well, yeah, you get double bubble then, don't you?
All right, there you go. Next question. Can Dave go into detail about his lower back issue? I had some pain and psoas massage has helped me a lot, but he's still dealing with it.
Well yeah, because it wasn't a lower back issue.
Mm.
Thought it was.
You're for you?
Yeah, for me. Effectively, what happened was my back did go. It went in spasm. I continued to train because I was halfway through UC2. And I ended up, my psoas ended up trapping my femoral nerve.
Oof.
My back got overloaded because my core and my glutes weren't working properly. So part of your core support is your psoas, your core, your lower back, your glutes, your hamstring. They all sort of work synergistically. If one of them is not working, so if your hamstrings aren't working correctly, they'll throw a load into your glutes, that internal will throw a load into your lower back, and you'll get lower back pain. Well, my glutes weren't firing properly at all. My lower core wasn't firing properly at all. As a result, my lower back and my psoas did all the work.
Okay.
When my lower back just had a bit of a fart because it'd been overworked and I continued, it meant the only thing really working in my core now was my psoas.
Mm.
That in me is quite heavily developed, and basically I ran out of space for my femoral nerve and it just clamped around it and crushed it. It took a long time to find out what the issue was because we were constantly looking at my back because that was where the pain started, thinking that that was the problem. Mm. But quite often I find with lower back issues is it's not actually the back that's the problem. It's something else in that network of muscles that support the core that's the issue.
Yeah, that's what's happened to me too.
And it's the lower back that's just getting overworked and getting fatigued and just slowing a wobble because it's tired.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I look at is glute and hamstring flexibility.
Mm.
And lower core.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that in a nutshell is it. It just took a long time, one, firstly, to find it, and then two, secondly, to treat it. And it's something I still have to be very specific around now. I still have to be very wary of it now.
Yeah. I feel like for me too, it's the same thing. Now, on another show, we had a chiropractor on, this was on Blood, Sweat, and Gear, and he was saying that a lot of the traditional crunch movements will just keep tightening that psoas muscle up more and more. That's not the kind of core work we really need to help support the low back. He was saying more like planks are a better type activity.
I was never a fan of planks. I still don't like it. And I'd always base my core work around crunch type movements and leg raise type movements. And that failed to solve the problem. So to be honest, yeah, I agree. It's my upper four are very heavily developed, whereas my lower two and my plateau are very poorly developed. And I agree. I think plank work and I find that doing any sort of, like, if I bent over row, I've got to be very, very careful to remain a very strong positive curve in my back. And when I do, I get a lot of ache in my lower core the next day.
Interesting.
It's just not used to supporting, and it's having to work really hard to try and support. It's like when I do leg raises, though I can do them, I know it's my psoas that's pulling. I know it's not my lower core that's pulling. So what's the point?
The
muscle's so developed now, it just kicks in straight away. It's very difficult for me to isolate it. So, yeah, I would tend to agree with that, actually. I don't like planks.
No, they're not fun, man. It doesn't feel, it's not a, like a, I'd much rather do something else. But I agree, though. And I found just don't that.
Try working anything. I know it sounds stupid because we know we are.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just don't feel like I'm working anything. But, I would advise a holistic approach to core training.
Okay.
Get a bit of everything in.
Yeah. We've got two more here. So Toby says, working out compound half-lives. I done a cycle as advised by a chemist where my doses were 1 milliliter, 1 milliliter one day, then 2 milliliters, then 1.5 milliliters, then 2 milliliters again, all up and down so that both compounds were at a consistent level rather than just 2 milliliters Monday and Thursday like I normally did. I want to know if there's a better thing or if basically two times a week is just as effective. Sounds like he was really messing around with these doses at first, and maybe it almost sounds like he was trying to do some sort of a front load.
It sounds to me like he was trying to stabilize blood plasma as much as possible.
Okay. Now, what's up with that, Dave?
I come across this a lot where people get obsessed about stabilizing blood levels. We don't have naturally stable blood levels. Our body and our hormone levels fluctuate massively during the day. You know, they're incredibly high first thing in the morning. They're on their ass about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the thing is, if you create stable blood levels, you can create problems. And the first problem you create is you're going to have more aromatization.
Oh, okay.
Because if your hormones spike and then drop, your body's not going to react. Because it's not that quick at reacting. But if they come up and they hold level, your body's going to start to react to that elevated level and start to aromatize at a greater rate. The other thing is, there is the potential chance that we would start to metabolize the drug faster. As blood levels stay constant, the body will start to regulate more efficiently, and then it will start to clear the hormone more efficiently.
Okay.
Yeah, I like to build irregularity in the cycles just so we don't get any upregulation of any of the clearance processes or aromatization.
Okay.
From what I've seen from blood work, guys tend to have higher estrogen levels the more stable their bloods are.
I've seen that too. And we discussed that once before while talking about variations in TRT versus taking one shot versus everyday type stuff.
And it's, there's definitely, yeah, it does seem to have an impact. I'd love to be able to get some proper work done on this, you know, take different compounds at different levels. And just see how somebody's aromatization changes with each compound.
That would be cool.
So, you know, use different esters to test and do different injection protocols. So you might have propionate every day, propionate every other day, propionate every third day. And then the same, and making sure that the peak value is never exceed. So the peak value you get from a single shot is never exceeded by the baseline of all the others, if you know what I mean. So you never go over that set peak point.
Yeah.
So say you peak at 110 NMOL, that when you did the other injection protocols, you never went over 110 NMOL.
Right.
And just see if there's a massive increase in clearance or a massive increase in aromatization if we're held constantly at various levels.
And everybody would probably have a slightly unique response, but you could definitely learn a lot.
I think there'll be enough of a pattern to formulate a hypothesis about what's going on.
I bet you're right, yeah. All right, I'm going to power forward here. The audience doesn't know, but we're having a connection issue. I think it's on my end. We got one more that we'll hit from Omar Hurtada, and then this wraps up all the questions we had from the Facebook thread. After this, we'll go back over to the Advices Forum. We've got a bunch of questions over there, which we will tackle on the following show. He says, good day, gentlemen. Is D-ball for pre-workout compared to everyday protocol a waste of time, or are there benefits in only using it on workout days? I'm not referring to an oral-only cycle.
The only benefit is if you find you get a benefit in training from it. It's a fast acting, all orals are fast acting. So technically speaking, because you take that oral in a lump pre-workout, you get a spike in anabolics in the system, and that should have an impact on your workout.
Yeah.
Some people it does, some people it doesn't. I remember I used to do oxys and anavar pre-workout.
Oh, really?
And the pumps I were getting actually got to the point where I couldn't train properly.
And would you not use those on non-training days then?
No, I just used them on training days.
Okay.
The pump, but then I trained 6 days a week when I was training properly. So.
Ah.
But the pumps I were getting were actually restrictive. They were that big.
Wow.
And that's one of the reasons I stopped doing them, because it was like, I'm only getting halfway through a fucking workout here, and I'm just can't move anymore.
Mm. That reminds me of what you've said about insulin. The insulin at times could be almost a deterrent, because you get so pumped, you stop shy. And that's what sounds like you were kind of worried about here too. You really couldn't take it as far as you wanted.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the issues I found with pre-workout orals.
Okay.
But I didn't find that on every oral. Some orals it worked, some orals it didn't.
Okay. I like D-ball pre-workout. I think it's good. And if I use it every day, it will start to affect my appetite. But if I use it, say, 3-4 times a week pre-workout, then I get that pre-workout effect, and I do start gaining some more fluid from it. But I also don't seem to get as much of that appetite issue either.
Yeah, and then there's another thing as well is the timing and it's affecting meals as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tried microdosing. Difficult to say if that had a greater impact or not. Definitely doesn't on an oral only cycle, but regards as in combined with an injectable, I'm not sure. Definitely easier on the stomach.
Yeah.
You know, like 10 milligrams six times a day sort of thing. Definitely easier on the stomach, but I didn't notice anything within the workout, but then again, I was never going to get a spike in hormone off the oral, so that's quite obvious why I didn't notice anything.
That makes sense. So it's maybe worth him to try it if he wants to and see for himself.
Yeah, I mean, by all means, and come back to us.
Yeah, yeah. Omar's a longtime listener, and if he's going to have some feedback, I'm sure he'll share it with us. Let's call it a day here, man. I know you got a lot going on this next week. You're going to be back to traveling, you said, right?
Yeah, back on the road.
Back on the road in your convertible, but with the top up, because it's not quite.
I'm going to be one of them wankers that drives around with a hat and a scarf and gloves on in the middle, and it'll be top down.
I want to see that. That'd be good.
Just to be an asshole.
I want to pull up to a light and hear your drum and bass, look over and see Dave Crossland with the top down glasses, dark glasses on, the gloves.
Matching colored driving gloves, scarf, and hat.
Yes, yes. Oh, that would be a sight, man. Well, I'm glad we could get together here on this weekend. We didn't tell anybody, but we're doing a weekend recording here. I'm getting ready to go train some legs after I eat some food. Or, I'm sorry, some back. That's what I have going on. How about you? What are you doing today?
Well, my day's pretty much done. It's 10 to 6 in the evening, so I'm probably going to just go upstairs, get something to eat, and veg.
Beautiful. Well, sounds good, man.
Work started at 7 this morning.
All right. Well, thanks for making the time, Dave. As always, I appreciate it. Yeah. All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff, Scott McNally with Dave Crossland. Check Dave out. We've got all of his links in the show notes, and we will see you next time.
Voices Radio Network.